information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
The government believed they were innocent. They have no idea what they're up against.
April is the cruelest month, and summer will surprise us. Welcome to episode 117 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the 3rd of April, 2009, and we've got all the news and politics and conspiracies and cover-ups you can cram into 2 hours. Oligarchy in the UK, G20, NATO, and the New World Order, Obama, Brown, and the Crown, banksters, protests, provocateurs, and the people, police state international, and surviving the Econo crash, plus Chaniacs, PNAX, and you, One World Trade Center, and 9/11 DNA, pharmaceutical industrial complex, water wars, recalls, drug wars, and the death of William Bennett. It's all here. It's April 3rd, 2009, episode 117 of MediaMonarchy.com.
London calling at the top of the dial, and after all this,
London calling. Yeah, don't look to us. Phony Obama mania has bitten the dust. That's right, you got it. It's Media Monarchy. It's episode 117, and it's April 3rd, 2009. April is the cruelest month. Of course, T.S. Eliot from the Wasteland. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show that I call Media Monarchy. Live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here at the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. As I can look out the window now on our ground level new studios, and I can see people coming and going outside, I just got to make them hear me from inside. Thanks to the worldwide home of free speech, revereradionetwork.com, simulcast, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and of course, Boulder Free Radio, KBFR 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado, and Free Radio Olympia, The Fro, 98.5, our neighbor to the north in Washington. Thanks to the both of them, and thanks to all of you who get in touch with me through all the little social networking portals. Facebook, MySpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter. And of course, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org is where you can get the podcast every week. Trying to cram as much as I can into a well-produced and enjoyable, though excruciating, swath of news. So let's, of course, glance at Google News right now, the morning of April 3rd. We, of course, have the Obamasai holding a town hall in Strasbourg, France. Of course, the globalists hopping from the G20 now to the NATO summit in France. Iowa court says gay marriage ban is unconstitutional. And four reportedly shot and hostages taken in Binghamton, New York. Of course, we are in the season of mass shootings. We have seen many. And if the copycat effect holds true, we will see many more, of course, as we approach the granddaddy date of April 20th. And I'm sure we'll have more and more on that as we get closer. So this is the first episode of the new month of April. And of course, there's not a lot of fooling you're going to find here on Media Monarchy. If you're a longtime listener, I thank you and appreciate it. If you're a new listener, we go through all the news, left side, right side, be damned, and try and get at the heart of the matters. So, of course, what's taken up front page attention for the most of the week, the build-up, the big show, now the after-party. We'll go in order through the G20 summit. Several postings, so of course we're going to cover the money masters, the banksters, the agent provocateurs, the oligarchs, the elites, inbred royalty, and all of it. So let's try and go in order here, and we'll start with the posting, arrest and protest in advance of London G20. Five activists arrested in G20 bomb plot as London went into lockdown for the arrival of the Anglo-American oligarchs and banksters. So let's take a report from the Daily Mail. Five people suspected of terrorist offenses were being questioned by the police in connection with an alleged plot to target the G20 summit. Three men, two women were arrested under the Terrorism Act in Plymouth over the 3 days leading up to the G20, officers uncovered a cache of weapons and suspected extremist material during a house search. They were questioned over claims they plan to target the meeting of the world's most powerful political leaders in London. The five were held after officers found weapons, imitation weapons, suspicious devices, and material relating to political ideology, whatever that is. So, another report, digging a little deeper, and not the first time or the last time, we're going to hear from Cryptogon.com. Great blog, great news source. Five held over suspected plot to disrupt G20 summit with explosives. Cryptogon asks, how will you know the difference between false flag operations and war? False flag ops are symbolic. The main goal is to create fear and obedience to state authorities through the use of propaganda in the aftermath of the event. The driving propaganda after the fact is the main payload, not the event itself. While it is possible that imbeciles will target individual executives for assassination or use improvised explosives to create work for janitors in corporate lobbies, these types of attacks are likely to be acts of state because of their utility for propaganda purposes. Think about it. Who benefits from attacks like these? The stoned white Rastafarian soy people with Bozo the Clown wigs and fair trade hacky sacks will get the blame. It's all the terrorists, right? War, on the other hand, targets critical infrastructure. Examples: financial transaction clearing is shut down. Stock markets are shut down. Communication systems are damaged or destroyed. Energy distribution systems are damaged or destroyed. While it's possible that attacks of this nature could be false flag, it's not likely because unmanageable cascading effects could result. So, as the situation continued to devolve, expect corporate states to try to short-circuit street-level activists with false flag ops and heavy follow-up on propaganda linking them with the terrorists. We can say now with hindsight, fortunately, we didn't see, at least that we know of, any egregious acts of inside job, false flag, provocateuring. But the last report with a clip on this first posting of the G20 arrests and protests in advance of the London G20 from Russia Today. London protest sparks fears of riots.
The biggest mass demonstration since the beginning of the economic crisis. An estimated 35,000 people gathered from all over the country. Armed with banners and flags, the protesters embarked on a several hour long march through the heart of London, organized by a rainbow alliance of more than 100 trade unions, church groups and charities that put People First March was united by a common theme: jobs, justice, and climate. The colorful procession ended up in Hyde Park for a peaceful afternoon rally.
We won't accept the old politics. We won't accept the old financial institutions anymore. From now on, we're going to put people first.
Thousands of people marched through London determined to fight for a fundamental change. And although this fight has been peaceful so far, it is just the first event in a chain of protests that some say could lead to the worst public disorder in a decade.
And that's all before the G20 began. One thing I want to note real quickly, there is a comment from my man Zach at the bottom of this post: arrests and protests in advance of London G20, where they note that just in time for the G20, Obama arrived in his new armor-laden limo, the Beast, which of course is protected against EMP attacks. So hat tip to my man Zach for sending me that, and we're actually going to get a little more into that in just a little bit. The next one, London Calling, which gave us our intro: G20 banksters, provocateurs, and the people. Now, at the top, I wrote that this was going to be the place that I would put any updates on any agent provocateur, false flag, protester, black bloc, anarchist kind of action. And there is a little bit. But starting at the top, from Raw Story, from Raw Replay, from The Guardian: world leaders wrangled Wednesday on how a London summit could fix the global economy as demonstrators attacked a bank in an anti-capitalist riot in the British capital. Demonstrators laid siege to the Bank of England and smashed the windows of a nearby bank that has become a symbol of the financial crisis rescue carried out by the British government, which was discussed at the Group of 20 summit. Several thousand invaded the main financial district, and tensions spilled over when protesters smashed their way into a major branch of RBS, the Royal Bank of Scotland, which was state-owned last year. Again, more links to VOA News, as well as more from Raw Story. The amount of clips I'm going to play covering the G20 are very limited. However, the amount of audio, video, photo, and articles relating to this are voluminous, to say the very least. There are a lot of videos and audio clips within the posts. Again, the radio version is sort of the truncated, bite-sized edition of what MediaMonarchy.com can give you if you dive into it. I take a lot of time putting a lot of research and a lot of links and a lot of documentation that you can check out for yourself. Protester said he had a responsibility to be there. A nice long post in collecting a lot of videos from a man Doug at blacklistednews.com. G20 anarchists set London financial district ablaze. And then we get to some ugly updates. One man died during the G20 protests in London. This from The Guardian, as well as Press TV and InfoWars and The Independent and The Guardian. A man died during the G20 protests in central London as a day that began peacefully ended with police saying bottles were thrown at police medics trying to help him. The man had collapsed within a police cordon set up to contain the crowds who had assembled in central London and the city to protest over the G20 summit. The Guardian notes that there were 63 arrests on that day. Gerald Salente of the Trends Research Institute, featured prominently in the Obama deception, I believe featured in the upcoming episode of The Corbett Report. He's been all over the place, and unfortunately, he's generally right with his predictions, and unfortunately, he's saying that this is just the beginning.
And all of these companies are now, you know, saying, hey, come and lease my space or buy my building at extremely discount rates, which leads me to your article, The Collapse of 09. You're predicting that the retail and commercial real estate bust will be way far greater than what we saw in housing.
That's where the real leverage is. I mean, take a New York. You had like MacLow, for example, where they put down $60 million and leveraged $6 billion. And it's not only the retail sector. How about all the brokerage firms, the banks, all of the consolidations and bankruptcies? Who's going to rent all this vacant retail space? This country's been way overbuilt for a long time. So this is where the real credit crisis is. It's going to make the subprime look like peanuts because no one's going to rent this empty vacant space. You're going to see ghost malls start springing up all over America.
Well, and then so the whole ripple effect that we always have in our economy, that's going, all these companies going bust. Well, obviously they're laying off thousands upon thousands of workers. We're getting the jobs report out Friday. Already, you know, this advance report, 742,000 jobs lost in 1 month, folks. This is just the beginning, you're saying.
Exactly. Look, you see current events form future trends. When I was here the last time, I think it was in August, we said there were going to be riots and protests. Voila, there they are. And I love the language they use. These are anarchists and whatever they call them. How about people that are really angry? You think they're out there too? No, people are going to be taking to the streets. They're losing everything. I'm a Bronx boy by birth. And my saying is, when people lose everything and they have nothing left to lose, they lose it. Mm-hmm. And they're going to lose it with these congressmen and these senators with this, who came up with this too big to fail mantra?
Yeah, you don't like that at all. Why?
Well, first of all, I could say with full authority, their mother's not better than mine. And this is supposed to be a free market system. And they're calling it socialism, Rebecca. It's not socialism. By definition, government-controlled capitalism is called fascism. Take it from Mussolini, he coined it.
And there it is. Corporatism. Fascism. And that's honestly what we're seeing. People throw a lot of the ism words around without knowing some of their actual definitions. And we're seeing the definition of fascism, again, according to Mussolini. Now, they mentioned the jobs report, which, of course, is out. So if we look at MarketWatch right now, economic report, 5.1 million jobs lost in this recession. However, back to the posting London Calling, G20 banksters, provocateurs, and the people, we have one headline from Danger Room: arrests, armored vehicles, and space hijackers in London protests. However, Paul Joseph Watson asking the question, who controls the Black Bloc anarchists? If anyone, I would say, or add. The British authorities seem to have little problem with allowing a group of violent Black Bloc anarchists to smash up the RBS building while provoking police, despite the group announcing their target in advance. Yet a legitimate anti-poverty organization had its accreditation to protest at the G20 removed on the orders of Downing Street. Apparently, if you wear black hoods and scarves, smash up private property, and provoke police, then that's absolutely fine and you'll be left largely untouched. But if, God forbid, you're a middle-of-the-road anti-poverty group that just wants to peaceably march down the street, an anti-poverty group expressed outrage after its accreditation to attend the G20 summit was suddenly withdrawn on Wednesday, the day before. Benedict Southworth, the group's director, said that the decision was part of the government's plan to, quote, stage manage events and prevent voices of dissent and disagreement being heard. The Black Bloc anarchist assault on the Royal Bank of Scotland building certainly had an air of being stage managed. The target was announced in advance. The authorities knew that the building was a prime target, and yet it was the only one in the street not boarded up. A cafe across the street was boarded up, and yet the RBS building was left completely vulnerable to attack. You should check out the photos that go along with that. It's very telling. It looks very stage managed. Wrapping up this London Calling post is a disgusting story from The Guardian. You got to read it to believe it. But it's the banksters' view of G20. I'm sure not everyone. And again, when we're talking about all this corruption in the world, it's very easy to say, oh, the government or small factions. Small, rogue, corrupt factions. So, from The Guardian, the banksters' view of the G20, betting on deaths and arrests. At Coq d'Argent, the restaurant atop the distinctive salmon-colored building at No. 1 Poultry, adjacent to Bank Underground Station, the bankers appeared slightly drunk on the excitement of the protest down below, basking in sunshine, ordering wine, and necking oysters. Two traders based in an opposite RBS on Bishopsgate said they had walked across the city, quote, to have a nice lunch and chill out. Sipping coffee after three courses and a few Marlboro Lights, they were angry that the police didn't seem to be making any arrests. It's kicking off over in Bishopsgate. The demonstrators are goading the police and hitting them with sticks, but they're just letting them. They're not arresting anyone. And these two wanted to see the long arm of the law carting a few protesters away because they had a financial interest in arrests. Quote, I'll make money if they arrest more than 140, he said. Traders, he explained, were putting spread bets on the number of arrests, with the quoted spread on Bloomberg at 130 to 140. They were also paying out on deaths, and if more than 20 demonstrators are injured by horse charges. The riots, they said, were only a minor inconvenience. Quote, we've been in this morning, made a lot of money, and now we're chilling out. You couldn't quite forget what was happening, though, the constant drone of helicopters competing with the increasingly noisy bankers. And I see at the bottom of this posting a comment from Jay that I hadn't seen, where they note that Gerald Celente is interesting and scary. Oligarchy in the UK. Obamasiah, G20, and the bankster New World Order. So our misleaders have gathered to pose as saviors from an economic crash that they created. And so we saw in the midst of the summit, the G20 came down from the mountain with its six commandments toward a new world order. Now, of course, I'm saying this tongue in cheek, however, but the links are there, and that's what they're calling it. Six pledges toward a new world order.
We're not going to go through them. We're not going to go through their policy papers and all those things right now. There's no time. But again, there is massive documentation for all of this and videos. Jumping back a couple days before the G20 summit, ahead of G20, council told to switch off illegal 15 million pound CCTV. This from The Guardian, and this is disturbing. The security operation at this week's G20 summit was thrown into chaos when it emerged that the entire network of Central London's wireless CCTV cameras will have to be turned off because of a legal ruling. The Department for Transport ruled that Westminster Council's mobile road cameras, a third of the authority's CCTV network, quote, do not fully meet the resolution standards required and must be switched off by midnight tomorrow. The blackout begins on the eve of the summit when world leaders arrive in the capital and protesters take to the streets. My girlfriend pointed out, and I'm still not actually sure what they mean when they say do not fully meet the resolution standards required. Are they speaking about resolutions parliamentary? Or are they speaking about resolution of the video of the CCTV? Again, all the links are there. I may just be missing it. To have all these cameras turn off, of course, brings to mind all sorts of other funky communication things that happen, you know, like the phone's not working for 20 minutes after JFK was shot. Or, of course, the cameras malfunctioning in London when they had their little 7-7 terror op. But again, we can look at this with a little bit of hindsight and say, okay, there were no spectacular explosions. An editorial from DailyMail.com asking the question, where is the new JFK we expected? But to the report about the beast, which, of course, could be the Antichrist. However, right now, we're talking about the Obamamobile. This from the BBC. You can take the man out of the White House, but you can't take the White House away from the man. And with Obama arriving in London for the G20 with a large contingent of White House staff with him, hundreds of security guards, doctors, chefs, and others are accompanying Obama on his visit, and the entourage includes a number of presidential vehicles, including his new armor-plated limousine, the Beast, and of course, the plane, Air Force One. The 4,000-square-foot Boeing 747 is equipped for the president to work while he's in the air. The exercise-loving president will even be able to use the onboard gym to keep fit in flight. The plane is fitted with some robust security equipment, including shields to protect its instruments from an electromagnetic pulse. The communications equipment is even capable of withstanding radiation from a nuclear attack. More from express.co.uk as well as Sky News. Now, I'm not sure if the Beast is outfitted with this same guard against electromagnetic pulse attacks. EMP basically blows out electronics, which I imagine would be a big piece of ammo for whatever possible 9/11 to be, cyber 9/11, false flag, psyop they got cooking. But everything's on right now, so we'll keep doing it. You can, of course, see lots of video. There's raw video from the AP, and I'm sure lots of other places, of the Obamas meeting the inbred UK royalty. However, the, of course, funny thing is that Obama gave the Queen an iPod. This from Christian Science Monitor. Well, it's better than giving her a bunch of DVDs that don't work. President Obama went to the Buckingham Palace in London, where he and First Lady Michelle had a lovely tea with the Queen. The press corps from both sides of the pond was paying close attention to the meeting. After all, it was another gift exchange, something the president didn't do too well the last time out. Gordon New World Order Brown gave Obama an ornamental pin holder carved from the timbers of the HMS Gannett, an anti-slave ship from the 1800s. President Obama, on the other hand, treated the gift exchange like a secret Santa party, forking over a bunch of American movies on DVD. And if that wasn't bad enough, it turns out they didn't work. They weren't compatible with British DVD players. That was a few weeks ago when Gordon New World Order Brown was here in the States. if you're even slightly tech savvy, you have to shake your head at going, they didn't fucking know that it's PAL in the UK? And this is our tech president? So again, all those stories are there, and you can laugh at them as you should. G20 meetings, the European Union is in tatters. That's from Global Research. However, from dailymail.co.uk, Brown invokes God and the New World Order in his St. Paul sermon. Gordon Brown has made an overtly religious call for a new world order based on the deep moral sense shared by all faiths. Making the first speech by a serving prime minister at St. Paul's Cathedral in London, he quoted scripture as he urged people to unite to forge a new global society. And again, during the summit, he said, New World Order. And again, as if I have to tell you, not too long ago, if you talked about the New World Order, you were a nut, and it didn't exist. But now it does, and it's good. Of last few headlines and updates on this posting, oligarchy in the UK, Rasmussen poll on non-existent global currency issue. This is some funny left cover foundation gatekeeping from thinkprogress.org. Again, acting as though there isn't talk about a one world currency. And we're going to get into how, of course, the sides have shifted, but they're all still playing the phony fucking left-right paradigm. CFR unveils global governance agenda. That's from oldthinkernews.com. However, we have old Clintonite Dick Morris talking to right-wing supposed talking head Sean Hannity. However, they now agree with the conspiracy theory people, and there is a new world order.
There is a big thing that's going to happen in London at this G20, and then they're hiding it, they're camouflaging it, they're not talking about it. Coordination of international regulation. What they are going to do is to put our Fed and our SEC under the control, in effect, of the IMF.
Oh, come on. They're going to take, they'll do this.
That's what was in the draft agenda. They call it coordination of regulation. What it really is putting the American economy under international regulation.
Yeah.
And those people who have been yelling, oh, the UN's going to take over global
conspiracy
government.
Conspiracy theorists.
They've been crazy, but now they're right.
Yeah. Well, when Geithner,
it's happening.
When Geithner said he would be open to the idea of a global currency, last week.
Yeah.
Those conspiracy people had said and suggested that for years. Right. You're not wrong.
And you know, it's, they always do at these conferences is they have the center show is here,
yeah,
and the side show they don't want you to pay attention to.
Right.
The center show is the size of the stimulus package.
Yeah.
The real show is international regulation of the financial institutions, which is going to happen under the IMF control. And remember, the IMF is run by Europeans,
right,
the World Bank by Americans.
There's a lot to dissect in there. However, we don't really have time. Again, I'll just reiterate that now that the parties have shifted, we now see people like Michael Savage saying the Obama administration is going to pull off a Reichstag false flag event. And we've got the left saying, oh, one world currency. No, that doesn't exist. So the things that you can easily see in your enemy party, when the tables turn, oh, you're just totally blind to it as you pay your allegiance to this two-party system that has done nothing for you in the last 50, 60 years, maybe. But I digress. World Bank president admits agenda for global government. Max Kaiser and the bankster bonus face-off. That's over on Catherine Austin Fitz's Solari.com blog. U.S. signals new era for global economy. That's from the Washington Post. The Bilderberg chairman, of course, notes that the Bilderbergs helped create the euro. They just calmly mention it. And lastly, two links to the bizarre story of Mexico's president being given a copy of George Orwell's 1984 by Queen Elizabeth. We've got the Telegraph, and we've got Kurt Nimmo writing for InfoWars. Queen Elizabeth's gift to Calderon, a limited edition copy of 1984. Why would she give him that? It's the handbook. Hillary says it's her favorite book. They love it. But let's try and wrap up this whole ugly G20 mess with the last posting that I have on it, put up late last night, early this morning for you. G20 updates. Meet the new world order, same as the old world order, where again and again and again, Gordon Brown tells us that the new world order is emerging.
But today, the largest countries of the world have agreed a global plan for recovery and reform. This involves the biggest interest rate cuts in history, the biggest fiscal stimulus we have ever seen, the biggest increase in resources in the history of our international institutions, with $250 billion more money than ever before for trade finance as well. For the first time, we have a common approach around the world to cleaning up banks' balance sheets and restoring lending. We are engaging in a deep process of reform and restructuring of our international financial system for now and for the future. And we have maintained our commitment to help the world's poorest. And we have put more money aside for that and also for a green recovery. These are not a single collection of actions. This is collective action, people working together at their best. I think a new world order is emerging, and with it the foundations of a new and progressive era of international cooperation. We have resolved that from today, we will together manage the process of globalization to secure responsibility from all and fairness to all. And we've agreed that in doing so, we will build a more sustainable and more open and a fairer global society.
Novus Ordo Seclorum. The new world order out of chaos. From the Associated Press, as well as the New York Times, as well as AccountancyAge.com, the G20 to give $1 trillion to the World Bank and the IMF. World leaders pledged $1.1 trillion in loans and guarantees to struggling countries and agreed Thursday, April 2nd, to crack down on tax havens and hedge funds, but failed to reach sweeping accord on more stimulus spending to attack the global economic decline. At the end of a highly anticipated one-day gathering, leaders of the group of 20 nations said they would upgrade an existing financial forum to serve as an early warning monitor to flag problems in the global financial system. They did not, however, satisfy U.S. and British calls for new stimulus measures, nor did European politicians get their goal of a global financial super-regulator. Not yet, anyway. We note from Your World Now on YouTube that last night Anderson Cooper noted the New World Order and the G20. So is this some kind of New World Order? There is the clip for you. And of course, we note that Anderson Cooper is heir to the Vanderbilt riches. Possibly had dealings, you know, with the CIA when he was at Yale and maybe Scroll and Key or Book and Snake. Globalresearch.ca notes at the G20 summit, the neoliberal agenda was untouched and the next phase of the crisis is looming. The G20 summit meeting in London from April 1st onward was loudly announced and publicized. Those 20 industrialized and emergent countries are meeting to find solutions to the crisis. But long before the end of the summit, it's clear they won't rise to the challenge. The G20 was not created in order to provide genuine solutions. It was hastily summoned a first time in November 2008 to salvage the powers that be and try to plug the breaches in capitalism. It's therefore impossible for this body to opt for measures that are sufficiently radical to save the day. There are two important and informative links within there. Just over to Wikipedia, where you can read just the breakdown of the 2009 G20 London Summit, as well as its precursor, the 2008 G20 Washington Summit. now it gets ugly. And this does get at the heart of what has been going on for a very long time. And this is all documented. This isn't a conspiracy. We just don't like to talk about it in polite company. But Steve Watson has done it. The first black president grovels to a virulently racist royal family. The sight of any U.S. president literally bowing to British royalty is enough for many Americans to become outraged. However, the fact that the latest to do so was America's first black president made yesterday's exchange between Obama and the Queen of England even more troublesome. Prior to meeting the Queen and her notoriously racist husband, Prince Philip, Obama announced that he loves her, and as in the imagination of people throughout America, the Queen stands for decency and civility. Which is a funny choice of words, as if to say it's only in your imagination that these people are decent and civil. How repugnantly ironic that the first black president of the so-called free world should refer to the most entrenched, prejudiced, and elitist institution in Europe as an icon of civility. Reports circulated regarding Obama practicing bowing and brushing up on courtly etiquette ahead of the meeting. Michelle Obama curtsied to the Queen. However, later she was treasonously caught inappropriately putting her hands on the glorious monarch. The London Telegraph even issued a report on how the move was a departure from what is considered appropriate protocol when meeting the Queen. So Michelle dare touch the hem of the garment. Prince Philip has made so many racist remarks in public that they literally fill a book with a link for you to ilxor.com. It's well documented that Prince Philip's sister Sophia was married to Christopher of Hesse-Cassel, an SS colonel who named his eldest son Karl Adolf in Hitler's honor. Indeed, all of Philip's sisters married high-ranking Nazis. 2 years ago, more revelations of Philip's Nazi links emerged in a book that featured never-before-published photographs of Philip, age 16, at the 1937 funeral of his elder sister Cecile, flanked by relatives in SS and brown shirt uniforms. Philip also helped start the World Wildlife Fund with former Nazi SS officer Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who, of course, is closely affiliated with the founders of the Bilderberg International Power Group. Prince Philip was also trained in the Hitler Youth. His belief in Nazi ideology is clear when one looks at what he has said on the subject of overpopulation. In the foreword to his 1986 book, If I Were an Animal, Prince Philip wrote, quote, "In the event that I'm reincarnated, I would like to return as a deadly virus in order to contribute something to solve overpopulation." There are many links and documentations within that to dispel any doubt you may have. There is a story from Russia Today and a video where they cover and call it all a faux pas when he asked Obama if he could tell the leaders apart. However, as we scamper away from the G20 and ease on over to France for the big NATO summit, we had the riot police storming G20 protesters' squats as the violence has moved to France, and police have tear-gassed hundreds of anti-NATO protesters already. Links to the Associated Press, the Daily Mail, AP, Wikipedia, Raw Story. Police clashed with hundreds of protesters on the eve of a NATO summit in Strasbourg Thursday, firing tear gas at the crowd to stop them entering the city center, an AFP correspondent reported. Masked protesters smashed a dozen bus shelters, set fire to trash bins, and built a street barricade in a south suburb of Strasbourg after marching from a peace camp set up by activists on the outskirts of the French city. Police said 600 people took part, but organizers put the number at 2,000.
Leaders move on from here to the NATO summit in Strasbourg tomorrow. Police there have already used tear gas to disperse a crowd of 800 to 900 people and tens of thousands of demonstrators have descended on the city and two southwest German towns nearby. Well, let's go live now to Strasbourg. Our Europe correspondent Alex Rossi is there. It doesn't augur too well, the scenes we've already seen unfold today.
Well, the ceremony doesn't start until tomorrow, but nobody's told the anti-NATO protesters. About 800 or 900 today in Strasbourg tried to break through a central cordon to get into the central area of the city. They were broken up by police, who did actually have to use tear gas at one time. Others jeered through the streets holding scaffolding poles. We understand that a French television satellite van had its windows broken. But the organisers here are saying that the noise made by these anti-NATO voices should not drown out what is essentially, or should essentially, they claim, be a celebration. The 60th anniversary of a military alliance that they say is, broadly speaking, kept Europe at peace. Now, there will be three areas for discussion tomorrow. They'll talk, of course, about the relationship with Russia. How should Russia be treated? Should it be treated as an enemy, or should it be treated as a partner for pan-European peace? They will, of course, also discuss the issue of Afghanistan. How to reverse the damage caused by a resurgent Taliban. I think we'll hear for calls for more troops and also for more money. That might not go down with some members of the alliance. And of course, I suppose the third central area for discussion, the big framework really, what should NATO's role be in the 21st century? Should it be a reactive fighting force to be deployed around the world? Or should it be a kind of globocop, the world's policeman, a subcontractor to the United Nations? Can it afford to do that? Those will be the areas up for discussion tomorrow as NATO moves into its seventh decade.
And all I can say is we're in big trouble. So that's the lowdown on the lowlifes at the G20 and NATO summits. I'm sure we will see more analysis and updates as the weekend spills on. However, like a blast from the past, Cheniacs, Peniacs, and the controlled opposition, and you. So we note at the top of this posting, so we're going to get a lot of phony left-right paradigm, gatekeeping, controlled opposition, blustering. Both wings of this phony bird are ratcheting up the rhetoric. So we have to make sure we don't get too distracted by the false left-right paradigm. Again, the gatekeepers, for the most part, can easily see all the inadequacies and corruption of the other side. But when the tables turn and theirs are in, they're blind to it. One party's in favor. The party out of favor is virulently making up all their connections and bluster and all they can do. And then when the party switch, it's the steam valve. They keep each other propped up. And occasionally, you know, they'll let you break some shit and make you think you're getting somewhere. They let out a little bit of steam so we don't explode. And again, all these things that for many years were in the purview of crazy conspiracy theorists, it's all more or less completely been laid bare. Now, of course, no. We still need our Zapruder film of 9/11. But as far as the banksters, the Federal Reserve, the New World Order, false flag terrorism, much of this has been exposed. So, another revelation from Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist Seymour Hersh. He was on NPR's Fresh Air, then he went on Olbermann to talk about Cheney and his stay-behind units in the Obama government. Cheney has moles in the Obama government. So again, we use terms like stay-behind units. That is from Operation Gladio. That's state-sponsored terror. Cheney has moles. should we be surprised by that at all? And again, I always posit the question, is it possible that someone like Hirsch is there to lead the left to the things they're supposed to pay attention to? Cheney's got moles in Obama's government.
What is Dick Cheney still doing? What will he do? How will all this affect our relations in the Middle East? Earlier this month, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Seymour Hersh spoke publicly about a previous story on Cheney, amplifying his report that special forces in the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, were getting clearance for assassination targets, not through legal chains of command, but through Cheney, illegally. And that Cheney blocked congressional efforts to learn more about the JSOC missions, rejecting clearance requests from congressional investigators already approved for top-level clearance on other matters. In the new issue of The New Yorker, Mr. Hersh reports that before the inauguration, when the president-elect was helping to persuade Israel to end its bombing of Gaza and withdraw ground troops in private, Cheney was telling Israel not to trust Obama because he was, quote, pro-Palestinian and, quote, not ready for the major leagues. But now we come to the reason for speaking to Mr. Cheney in the present and future tense. In an interview yesterday with NPR, Hersh said that Cheney installed people called stay-behinds at, quote, a lot of agencies who are not only reporting back to Cheney, especially in the military and national security, both keeping him informed and probably, Hersh says, up to a point still controlling policy, including even Bush-Cheney people still now working ostensibly in the Obama-Biden White House.
Are you saying that you think Vice President Cheney is still having a chilling effect on people who might otherwise be coming forward and revealing things to you about what happened in the Bush-Cheney administration?
I'll make it worse. I think he's put people left. He's put people back. So they call it a stay behind. It's sort of an intelligence term of art. When you leave a country and you're driven out, you've lost the war, you leave people behind. It's a stay behind that you can continue to have contacts with to do sabotage, whatever you want to do. Cheney's left to stay behind. He's got people in a lot of agencies that still tell him what's going on, particularly in the defense, obviously, and also in the NSA. There's still people that talk to him. He still knows what's going on. Can he still control policy up to a point? Probably up to a point, a minor point, but he's still there. He's still a presence. And again, because of the problems this administration is having filling jobs, a lot of people who served in the Bush-Cheney government, particularly even in the White House, people on most sophisticated staffs, are still there. You simply can't get rid of everybody. You may not even want to. Some are professional people. But Cheney is, I would never call it admiration. But formidable. Yeah, this guy is the real McCoy.
Cheney has moles in the Obama government. Is this an important story? Absolutely. Does this expose further the underbelly of executive assassinations and executive action that we've, of course, known about since the 70s in the Church Committee? We've known that this has been going on for a long time. But could this be diversionary to a point? So you get people looking for hidden moles within the Obama government that Cheney put there. However, when you look at the main roster of the Obama administration, it's nothing but a bunch of CFR, Trilateral Commission, globalists on their face. Skull and bones, all of them. And Robert Gates, he's not a very hidden mole, is he? Remember, of course, he was the designated successor and wasn't at the inauguration. In case everything blew up, Robert Gates would have taken the reins. But let's keep moving. Introducing PNAC 2.0, Foreign Policy Initiative. There is a quick note from Rachel Maddow. I was going to play that clip. I don't have time for it. However, it is funny to note. And again, ratcheting up the phony left-right rhetoric because all she can say is, that's right, because they lost. You lost the election. You're losers. You're scampering off. Y'all, start a new think tank. Phony left-right gatekeeping bluster from the phony progressives at Air America and the Microsoft General Electric Broadcasting Corporation. However, from Raw Replay, and again, there are videos and links, and this is important to note, that the PNAC members, many of them from the original Project for a New American Century, have started a new neocon group. The neocons are back. The same repugs who sold the country on the war in Iraq have formed a new group called the Foreign Policy Initiative, and declaring their last group as mission accomplished. So Rachel Maddow talked to thinkprogress.org and yada yada blah blah blah. PNAC is now Foreign Policy Initiative. Of course, William Kristol, Frank Carlucci, Gaffney, Cheney, Kagan, Friedberg, Fukuyama, Adams, Rowan, Quayle, Rumsfeld, Abrams, Bauer, You'll remember that the folks from the Project for a New American Century wrote a think tank piece called Rebuilding America's Defenses, in which they said they wouldn't be able to pull off their Anglo-American empire unless they had a new Pearl Harbor. So, speaking of that false flag 9/11 event, Bush officials facing war crimes charges. That's from digitaljournal.com. I think last year I maybe posted up some satirical thing on April Fool's Day about Bush being arrested or resigning or something. Not a whole lot of fooling going on this time around. However, floated around on April Fool's Day was the story that John Yoo was arrested in Italy. So, InfoWars notes, and we do have links to worldproutassembly.org, but this is a hoax. A number of websites were carrying a story claiming that John Yoo, that's, remember, torture memo, president can sexually torture children in front of their parents. If the president does it, it's not illegal. John Yoo, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General of the United States, was arrested in Milan, Italy, and was being held for possible extradition to Spain, where he and five other retired officials who served under Bush are expected to be indicted by a Spanish court for violations of the Geneva Conventions, the Convention Against Torture, and the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. So, that story from the New York Times, Spanish court weighs inquiry on torture for six Bush-era officials. There's a lot in there, more from the AFP, as well as Think Progress and Voice of America. And I'll just note that, of course, always beware your sources. We have discovered from Jim Tucker and the American Free Press, as well as others, that it is believed that the aforementioned Bilderberg group is going to meet in Athens, Greece on May 14th. A quick note about Palin and Scientology, apparently. Palin's advisor and his secret Scientology plot was outed. That's from Raw Story, as well from Scoop out of New Zealand. Contrary to Palin advisor, Scientology political action committees exist. Politics makes for strange bedfellows. Lastly, on this, Cheney-Ax, Penax, the controlled opposition, and you, we note, surprise, Leahy suggests that the Truth Commission might not happen. Again, from thinkprogress.org, in a meeting on Monday with Vermont citizens, Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, admitted that the Truth Commission he has advocated to examine Bush administration crimes like torture most likely won't happen. Reporter Charlotte Dennett writes that Leahy said political opposition was too strong to overcome. Links in there to Consortium News, Andrew Sullivan. And again, we've mentioned several times this supposed truth commission that's going to come out. But now, surprise, surprise, it doesn't look like it's going to anyway. And now we're knocking on the door of hour number two of episode 117 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 3rd, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, Media Monarchy, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and revereradionetwork.com. KBFR in Boulder, and Free Radio Olympia in Washington. I thank you for help in spreading these words, these ideas, these memes, this research, this news, these politics, these conspiracies. Once again, I had to do it. There are times when the news piles up on me so much that I just have to basically post it all up as headlines. And again, hope that, one, I'm putting it on the record, it's there, you can search it out and find it later, and two, that you will find it now or later. April is the cruelest month. And will summer surprise us? We're first going to get into Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. Headlines for you. Obama's dictator status expands with the firing of Wagner. Of course, head of GM stepped down as per some of the agreements that they made. So apparently the president now has the ability to fire heads of companies. And we've noted, of course, that General Motors and the big three automakers, say what you will about them, they have to beg for the crumbs of some of this stimulus money because they actually produce things. And it's been the plan of the trilaterals for a long time to deindustrialize the North American Union. All the same trilaterals, Bilderberg folks, from the Carter administration, from Brzezinski to Gates to Volcker, they're all back if they ever actually went anywhere. Again, one party's in, one party's out. Now, Obama owns General Motors. Businessweek.com notes, CanadaFreePress.com has a great piece about Obama's involvement in the Chicago Climate Exchange, and that would be Obama being intimately tied to the coming carbon trading scam, you know, basically something he helped push through Congress, something he's benefited from in Chicago, he's now going to implement on a national level. Did Obama get his August 6th PDB? That's the question from 911blogger.com. Of course, the August 6th presidential daily briefing that Bush got in 2001, of course, said that bin Laden determined to strike inside U.S. We're going to get to what could be this new warning in just a little bit and what happened as a result. However, ho-hum, another Obama nominee doesn't pay taxes. Surprise, surprise. Again, they all know it's bullshit. Show me the law. This time, of course, it's Sebelius up for health secretary. We note, of course, that the senator from Citibank, Tom Daschle, had to step down because he doesn't pay taxes and hires illegals and is intimately tied to lobbyists. Former naval officer files criminal complaint against Obama, and there are extras up on YouTube from Alex Jones's Obama Deception. So that's the Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. Now it's going to get ugly as we look at Police State International. The mayor of London is going to flood the capital with a 2012 Olympic army of 10,000 plus. Of course, we have the 2012 Olympics coming up in London. Northcom responds to North Dakota flooding. We'll get a little bit more on that later. The Army Times has reported on the military deployment in Sampson, Alabama. Remember after that mass shooting on that Tuesday evening in Alabama, of course, the military was called out. And they were called out on it. And there's been some backpedaling. Flint, Michigan's government considering abandoning parts of the city, cutting police and fire. There was a simulated attack at North Chicago High School. There is a video there for you if you hit that link, taking you to suburbanchicagonews.com. Of course, the terror drills always going on, either to smokescreen false flag activity or just to acclimate you to the police state. Either way, they win. Non-lethal encounters, Army training cadets at the Paintball USA course. Military exercises at the Burlington Airport in Vermont. Police simulate terror attack on the Pope. That's from YNetNews.com. Anti-terror drill at Otsugi Air Base calls for team approach. We, of course, like to note that a guy named Lee Harvey Oswald was stationed at Otsugi and was tied in with the crazy secret B flights. I can't pull it out off the top of my head right now. Homeland stupidity, military police, law enforcement are planning a checkpoint coming up in Tennessee. More mass graves. Houston is expanding their cemetery. We've got plastic coffin liners being delivered by the truckloads. And again, last year we saw all the plastic coffins in Atlanta, of course, near the CDC. Lately, we've seen renovations and things going on at an Arizona cemetery. What are they preparing for? We've noted this before, and again, the phony left and the phony right. The phony left are out now decrying Glenn Beck talking about FEMA camps and fascism. But it's interesting to note that a vet critic characterizes the stories of mass graves as rumor-mongering on Portland, Oregon's own Tom Hartman show.
One of the things, there's a terrible rumor going around that has popped up, and it's getting to the point of a viral email here in the last week, that and this started with your good buddy Alex Jones. No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. But with Alex Jones, who is one of the great conspiracy theorists of all time.
No, he's been on the show a couple times back years ago. He never ceases to be entertaining.
Oh, well, he absolutely is that. Well, he's being very entertaining again with headlines like mass graves for U.S. citizens. And he, of course, the implication being they're coming to take us away, ha-ha.
Right.
And what they show is video and pictures taken at the Phoenix VA Cemetery that show big backhoes digging holes and loading these precast concrete vaults into the ground. And of course, the hint is, this is bad news. This is just nothing more than rumor mongering. We have a link to the government website where you will see the contract that was let last year. This is standard upgrade just being done right now at a number of VA cemeteries. They're going in the grading, getting drainage, putting in new vaults. You know, our veterans are dying an enormous number, over 700,000 every year, Tom. So this is just constant upgrading of the VA cemetery.
Yeah. I should say, in Alex's defense, though, he does cover a lot of stories that don't get covered by the mainstream media in ways that need to be covered, although occasionally he wanders into areas that, you know, I wouldn't go, and apparently in this case, he stepped in.
Tom Hartman there, more or less defending Alex Jones by actually having to admit the truth that he covers stories that many do not. And so, nothing to see here, move along, they're not preparing camps to deal with you when you get angry. Camp Arnie, a glimpse of things to come. California camps, Schwarzenegger. We got Luke Radowski being arrested for attempting to question Mayor Bloomberg. We also have a terror recruiting video targeting young Minnesota men. There is a video from WCCO.com. And again, thanks to my man Jeff for sending me that story. Robot killers gaining more autonomy. That's from military.com. Surveillance towers planned for Detroit and Buffalo. That's from the Associated Press. Secret U.S. forces carried out assassinations in a dozen countries. That's, again, Hirsch and Democracy Now! Airport body scanner machine tested at a Salt Lake airport. That's from KSL.com. Police fusion centers criticized for tracking Ron Paul, Bob Barr, and Cynthia McKinney supporters. Another clip from Glenn Beck, where he notes that he was wrong. It's not socialism. It's fascism. And he's actually right. Again, as we heard Gerald Celente mention a little bit ago. Homeschool refugees from Germany to here. That's from the Washington Times, of course. The attack on any kind of personal liberties, whether it's homeschooling or what kind of food or supplements or what you want to put in your body. Feds begin post 9/11 airline watch list takeover. That is from Threat Level on Wired. Border security to get a $400 million upgrade. That's from the Washington Times. Newsblaze.com asks the question, is America on the road to fascism? And lastly, on this Police State International heading, the NYPD is seeking to further expand its surveillance cams and their license plate readers.
Wants to keep a closer eye on security in Midtown. Police Commissioner Ray Kelly looking to expand anti-terrorism measures already in place in other parts of Manhattan. CBS 2's Jay Dow live in Midtown right now. Good morning, Jay.
Well, good morning to you, Maurice. The NYPD says it needs $21 million in federal grant money to put cameras like those all on the same system. The need for the upgrade, according to the police commissioner, is a result of the world we live in.
The NYPD wants to cast a wider net and expand its high-tech surveillance network beyond Lower Manhattan.
It's basically taking the concept of hardening Manhattan south of Canal Street and moving it up to the Midtown area as well.
The system relies heavily on technology from the public and private sector.
That would mean, in essence, the cameras and the license plate readers, and coordinated from the new coordination center in Lower Manhattan.
The department has secured most of the $92 million $1 billion it will cost to complete the Lower Manhattan system, which is patterned after the so-called Ring of Steel already working in London. The Midtown grid would cover a zone between 34th and 59th Streets, from the East River to the Hudson River. Your every move monitored in a live feed for the larger purpose of collecting data that would hopefully prevent another terrorist attack. But testifying before City Council, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly conceded NYPD would need help to move forward with the new plan.
Is that entirely dependent on a federal grant?
Yes.
The New York Civil Liberties Union has filed a lawsuit against the NYPD, wants to know how the department plans to balance the city's safety issues with privacy concerns. We're live in Midtown. Jay Dow, CBS News.
More surveillance in New York as we glance now at Google News for more updates on the latest mass shooting. There now is reportedly 13 dead and 26 wounded at a Binghamton, New York aid group for immigrants. I've been ranting and raving. I don't want to be so bold as to say I've been predicting this, but you'll note that for the last several weeks I said there will be many mass/school shooting events towards the end of March and all the way through April. The MilTech cyber war heading under. April is the cruelest month. Alex Ansari has an article about the emerging sunspot cycle 24 and a weakened magnetic field. The Examiner has the electrical power grid to be blasted by 2012 solar flares, maybe bringing the quote-unquote perfect storm. The Air Force has said a bright light people saw was not a man-made object. That's from WTOPnews.com. Deep solar minimum is from NASA, again, talking about the sun and the sunspots and the sun cycles, not as it relates to anthropogenic phony global warming, but as it relates to the coming cyber wars and space wars and the 2012 event. DoD okays multi-billion-dollar secret satellites. That's from DODBuzz.com. Threat level set up their configure war room, your front row seat for Cybergeddon that didn't quite seem to go down with the configure worm. Vowing to prevent a cyber Katrina, senators propose a cyber czar. Again, this is nothing new. We've noted this before, and again, we've noted that one of the heads of cybersecurity quit recently because he said the NSA is taking over. And yeah, it's back of the paper. The CFR has a plan for planetary geoengineering. Quote, add more small reflecting particles in the upper part of the atmosphere. And if that has anything to do with contrails and chemtrails and HARP, God help us. Lastly there from the Washington Post, Senate legislation would federalize cybersecurity. A few salacious and one important note on JFK and assassination updates. The origins of JFK's struggle against the CIA, that is a great posting on one of the journals up on democraticunderground.com. Of course, noting things like the Bay of Pigs, which of course happened on 420, another anniversary coming up. However, a woman claims she had secret JFK love child in a wartime fling and she doesn't want money. So says this Austrian woman who claims of a JFK affair. AustrianTimes.at, The Independent, The First Post, and The Sun, all out of the UK. Of course, if there's a sex scandal, the UK tabloids are all over it. The geopolitics. Taliban chief vows amazing attack on Washington soon. And his name is Baitullah Mesud, last name M-E-H-S-U-D, and you should see a photo of this guy. His vow of an amazing attack on Washington that was carried by Fox News. They also say that intel analysts say his threat is credible, so as if to retaliate, Danger Room notes that a drone attack killed 12 after the Taliban threatened D.C., Obama notes that, yep, we're at war in Pakistan, and the White House won't rule out troops for the Pakistan war. Obama to bring more mercenaries to Afghanistan, does that sound familiar? U.S. weighs putting 70,000 troops in Afghanistan, that's from the Wall Street Journal. Muslim member of Congress, Ellison, notes that he is, of course, skeptical of the Afghan surge. Obama and Medvedev of Russia supposedly had a big breakthrough seeking huge cuts in nuclear weapons. That's from spacewar.com. And dozens of aircraft in Israel's strike on Sudan. Look to see those country names showing up in the news more and more and more as the days and weeks slip by. Again, if it bleeds, it leads. Murder and mayhem reigns supreme. Gunman kills 8 at a care home. That's from the BBC. 8 dead in the North Carolina care home shooting. That's from ABC. We've also got 5 dead in a California shooting. That's from the AFP. We've got an out-of-control truck kills 2. That's from the Washington Times. 2 dead in a Newburgh, Oregon plane crash. And 16 dead after a helicopter crash in the North Sea. That last story, across the pond from The Guardian and Wikinews. 16 dead after a military helicopter crash in the North Sea. A couple notes on the impending Econo crash. Times Online asked the question, is there any gold inside Fort Knox? If you scroll down in the story, you'll note that they then start to go over other crazy conspiracy theories. There is a video and a great article about the righteous rage of Denis Kucinich. Tax dodgers multiply as underground economy cushions job cuts. That's from the Denver Post. 21st century abolitionist project, slavery and taxation. That's from LouRockwell.com. And a satirical note on the Econo crash. We note that, unfortunately, another piece of the drum kit has been claimed by the recession.
Another piece of drum kit is claimed by the recession. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Area musician Brandon Ritger admitted to reporters today that his increasingly dire economic situation has forced him to sell one more piece of his drum kit. This time, it was the floor tom that had to go. Ritger's had this to say as he sat behind his remaining snare drum and cowbell.
I really have no idea how I'm going to play the Inagata DeVita solo now.
Word has just come in that an anonymous millionaire, saddened by the prospect of a scaled-back version of the Iron Butterfly classic, has generously donated a new drum to Mr. Ritger. A great day for rock. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News.
Oh, it's nice to shake off the chaos with a little bit of satire. Of course, always done well by The Onion Radio or video. Last few things on this April is the cruelest month news purge. A little West Virginia worry. Patriot Coal settles lawsuit regarding their toxic waste mines. That's from Forbes. EPA stops mountaintop removal. Waterways are still not safe. That's from PlanetSave.com. Newsday has the reforestation of U.S. mountaintop mine sites gets a UN endorsement. And finally, residents sue over coal ash dump disguised as a golf course. That's from HamptonRoads.com. A few notes in the world of media memes. Can The Simpsons solve the Mideast conflict? And that's being asked by Haaretz, and I believe there is an upcoming episode of The Simpsons where The Simpsons are going to Israel. Stewing in my mind and on random pieces of notes, I'm working on putting together a video of Simpsonology with all the strange symbolism and stories and memes and things that are hidden and in your face within 20 years of The Simpsons. That's going to be no small undertaking, but I'm sure The Simpsons going to Israel will be right in there. From the New York Times, protest from the right side of country. They're shutting Detroit down, and I thought about playing that new song from John Rich for you as, of course, country rediscovers its 9/11-style populism, and have you forgotten? But shutting Detroit down was pretty bad, and I wasn't going to subject you to that. The last note, history mystery, Three Mile Island, exposing the government's cover-up of our most infamous nuclear accident. That is from alternet.org, and that wraps up that brutal news purge known as April is the cruelest month. Moving quickly, and we note from the Los Angeles Times, as well as PE.com, and the Contra Costa Times and CBS2.com. And we also note that, of course, this is not exclusive to California, because the Obamavilles, Hoovervilles, Bushtown, Shantytown, Tent Cities are going to be popping up everywhere. Right now, however, Ontario, California's Tent City residents are required to wear wristbands to identify themselves.
Homeless people have been living in a tent city in Ontario are now being evicted. City officials say there are just too many people, and the situation is creating some health and safety concerns. So where will all the displaced people go now? KKL9's Greg Mills live in Ontario with the latest on this story. Greg?
And Lena, the Ontario officials are hoping these people will go back home to whatever city they're from, and those cities will take care of it. Right now, they are forcing more than half of the people here in Tent City to leave. They've got 1 week to do that. Tent City popped up last July here near the Ontario airport. The city wanted its homeless population in a dedicated area, and the city and nonprofits took care of their basic needs. Ontario estimates they have about 140 chronic homeless. But word spread quickly about Tent City, and now there are more than 400 here from as far away as Florida. Tent City can't handle that many, according to the city, so they're telling non-Ontario residents to leave within the next week. The city providing bus fare or cab fare. They plan to curb the population, and then the city will grade this area, clean it up, put a fence around it, and only residents with a blue wristband will be allowed here. The blue wristband is given to verifiable Ontario residents.
We know that approximately 200 or so are from outside the city. We can't possibly help the region's homeless. We don't have the resources. We're not the lead agency. The county behavioral health is the lead agency on that. We're working with them.
Try to find another place. Me and my old man and his brother are thinking about getting an apartment together.
And we're back looking live at Tent City in Ontario. I'm told about 50 people have already gotten up and left and gone home to wherever that might be. Ontario police say the place actually has been kind of self-policed. The folks here kind of take care of their own problems. And Ontario police say they really haven't had major problems that you might expect in a situation like this since last July. The big exception was in October when a man was stabbed. And Ontario police also arrested two people here. But that's over a span of 7 or 8 months. Reporting live from Ontario in Tent City, Greg Mills, KCAL 9 News.
Tent City residents in Ontario, California are required to wear wristbands that identify whether they should stay or they should go. We, of course, noted the coming ghost malls noted by Gerald Celente. And what's going to happen is people are going to start squatting in every available thing. And as we see, and as of course we just noted, you know, Flint, Michigan, talking about annexing, selling off parts of the city, cutting fire and police. A lot of places aren't going to have the resources to keep looking for squatters. So once people get pretty entrenched, it's going to get pretty strange. Moving quickly, Homeland Security and some Predator drones were on the scene fighting the Red River flood in North Dakota. This from the Star Tribune. The flood fighters in the Red River have added a high-tech weapon to their arsenal this year. A Predator unmanned drone aircraft on loan from the Department of Homeland Security was being used to survey the valley for the first time and give officials a quicker assessment than ever before of the flood's effects on the ground. Not making light of the plight of the folks in Fargo, North Dakota. But again, they just kind of calmly announced, that's right, the military, we're here helping you. As again, we've noted, PR ops will accompany the further federalization and militarization of your local police force and emergency management units. They'll bring out the jaws of life and they'll surveil, you know, with the... A couple notes on the most amazing false flag psyop made for TV event in my lifetime, and that's of course known as 9/11. The Ground Zero Tower has lost its freedom. Remember, of course, it was going to be the Freedom Tower. This from the Associated Press, as well as Wikinews, as well as the AFP, as well as Raw Story, as well as MSNBC, the Freedom Tower is out. One World Trade Center is in.
New York City, the World Trade Center site, which since 9/11 is inarguably hallowed ground. In an effort to try to pay respect to the enormous tragedy that happened there, former New York Governor George Pataki named the planned building that will one day replace the World Trade Center the Freedom Tower. But for more than a year now, the Port Authority has been slowly and quietly backing away from that name. Because they say the name might scare off prospective tenants. Well, today, the New York Daily News and the New York Post report that the building owners will call the new skyscraper. Ready? Drum roll, please. Ready for the new name? You ready? One World Trade Center. You know, it is easy to remember. Maybe that's the way it should be.
The city medical examiner is able to identify the remains of yet another victim. 54-year-old Manuel Emilio Mejia was a worker at the Windows on the World restaurant, which was situated on the top floors of the North Tower. The ME says the remains were found during the second phase of cleanup and recovery, which began in January of 2006. Currently, 1,624 victims have been identified, but more than 1,100 others have not.
And that's the other bit of 9/11 updates that I have for you. The 1,627th 9/11 victim identified after DNA retesting. And again, links in there to historycommons.org, as well as Newsday and the Associated Press. And I believe I swiped that video from New York One and posted it up to youtube.com/mediamonarchy. A flashback there, other 9/11 updates, going back to January, more on the DNA, but also with some documents, WTC7 and the television. A bunch of really important stories that we're going to have to blast through very quickly. I almost thought there at the last moment I would maybe shelve these. But I won't. We'll go through them and I'll tell you why it's even more important and what may be coming up in the next week or so. But EnviroHealth, the pharmaceutical industrial complex. From EcoChildsPlay.com, depression drug illegally marketed to kids. A 5-year probe of Forest Laboratories by the Justice Department into illegal marketing of Lexapro to children has an ironic twist to it. The FBA, or rather the FDA, just approved the use of Lexapro for depression in children. This is a story of off-label, ineligible, illegal kickbacks, and more, of course, brought to you by the disease industry. A government panel is urging depression screenings for all teens, of course, so they can get them all on psychotropic drugs. And they usually are when they go on their school shooting rampage. They break. However, from the Associated Press, eatdrinkbetter.com, as well as ABC and a host of other places, we of course note, again, the water wars. This time, pharmaceuticals found in fish across the U.S.
Researchers in a nationwide study report that fish caught near wastewater treatment plants serving 5 major U.S. cities have residues of pharmaceuticals in them. The study's findings have prompted the Environmental Protection Agency to significantly expand similar ongoing research to more than 150 different locations. Study co-author Brian Brooks, a Baylor University researcher and professor, says that a person would have to eat hundreds of thousands of fish dinners to get even a single therapeutic dose, but even extremely diluted concentrations of pharmaceutical residues can harm fish, frogs, and other aquatic species because of their constant exposure to contaminated water. Brooks and his colleague Kevin Chambliss tested fish in Chicago, Dallas, Phoenix, Philadelphia, and Orlando. For comparison, they also tested fish from New Mexico's pristine Gila River Wilderness area, an area isolated from human sources of pollution. Fish in New Mexico proved uncontaminated. The EPA has called for additional studies about the impact on humans of long-term consumption of minute amounts of medicines in their drinking water, especially in unknown combinations. Limited laboratory studies have shown that human cells fail to grow or take unusual shapes when exposed to combinations of some pharmaceuticals found in drinking water.
We now jump out of the water, onto the border, border wars, and the homeland stupidity, Agent Orange controversy. We'll break that down for you really quickly. Basically, there's a lot of trees and shrubbery and brush that grow on the borders that, you know, a lot of people can kind of hide behind. So what we're doing now is spraying toxic chemicals on those to kill those plants and probably really harm anyone else that happens to come in contact with it. Obama and Napolitano and Homeland Stupidity, they all have no problem with this whatsoever. The Veterans Administration out of Miami put thousands of veterans at risk of HIV infection. This from USA Today. Thousands of veterans who underwent certain routine medical procedures at Miami's VA Medical Center since 2004 are at risk of being infected with hepatitis or HIV. That from the Miami Herald. John Vara, V-A-R-A, the center's chief of staff, says the risk of infection is low, but that any risk is unacceptable. It was discovered 3 weeks ago that some water pumps used during colonoscopies and gastrointestinal procedures were being rinsed, but not disinfected. Miami Vet Administration put thousands of vets at risk of HIV infection. We note from EcoWorldly.com that Royal Dutch Shell has dumped wind, solar, and hydro in favor of biofuels. From Sky News, again, we note with a duh. Germ warfare porting down vets. They die early. More than 300 Armed Forces veterans who volunteered as human guinea pigs at military labs have died earlier than expected, according to the British Medical Journal. The journal published the first long-term health survey into the controversial germ warfare work at Porton Down. The BMJ reports that among 18,276 men who took part in experiments over 63 years, death rates were 6% higher than among a similar group who did not. Last year, the government agreed to pay £3 million in compensation to a group of 369 veterans who sued over claims their health had been affected by deliberate exposure to nerve gases and other toxins. Further legal claims are being taken part in the tests. Nor were scientists able to link premature deaths to the experience. The research team did not have access to information on potentially influential factors like whether veterans smoked. As a result, they could not attribute these findings to participation in the human volunteer program at Porton Down. More on that at fizorg.com. And of course, we know that volunteers were told they were helping find a cure for the common cold. Kissinger said military men are dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns in foreign policy. And again, it's not a conspiracy that mind control experiments have been done. It's not a conspiracy that black men were given syphilis and let die and were studied as they did it. They don't care about you. And maybe, you know, 40 or 50 years later, they'll throw your kids some crumbs and in the back of the paper say, oh, well, we're sorry for testing you with that chemical or drug or bioweapon that we created. And then, of course, it'll accidentally get out of a lab and, you know, a drill or an accident. So the flashbacks there, of course, foot and mouth virus released from government lab. That's Porton Down. It was a drill. UK offers nerve gas veterans a £3 million apology. Of course, we just noted that, and that goes back to January of 2008. The last thing we'll note on this EnviroHealth posting, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, that we're still watching HR 875, a.k.a. the Food Safety Modernization Act. Now, I talked a minute ago about skipping some stories because I didn't have time or why I shouldn't. Those stories are coming from my embryonic new website called foodworldorder.com. Half a dozen things up there. We've gone over some of them on previous couple of episodes of MediaMonarchy.com. However, I added a little more this week. So I just moments ago made the decision to not go over these two long postings up on foodworldorder.com. Whetting your appetite, the first one is Monsanto's GMO corn harvest fails massively in South Africa, and the other is a big post about water wars, recalls, factory farms, and food stamps. So again, all that and more is now available at foodworldorder.com. And again, I just launched it, trying to figure out exactly what to do with it and how I should approach it, who I should possibly get involved to help me on foodworldorder.com. You can email me at mediamonarchy@yahoo.com and we can talk about it. So jump on those stories for the moment, segues into episode 81 of the Corbett Report, Surviving the Collapse. We all know that the economy has fallen apart, and we all know we're in for a summer of discontent, but now what? Is there anything we can do to prepare ourselves for what is coming? So join James Corbett on episode 81 of the Corbett Report, Surviving the Collapse, as he explores the three G's of self-sufficiency. He talks to international forecasters and backyard warriors and relearns the old verity that forewarned is forearmed. I'll tell you right here, I was just contacted just a little bit ago from James Corbett of CorbettReport.com out there in Japan fighting the info war. He's invited me back on for an upcoming episode of the Corbett Report to talk about specifically the food world order. So I guess I'm basically thinking out loud right now. Perhaps we'll jump those stories on foodworldorder.com for right now, and maybe when I talk to James for his show, he'll talk to me as we talk about those stories on foodworldorder.com. So there it is. And as of now, episode 81, Surviving the Collapse, is available from CorbettReport.com. Again, Ron Paul. Again, I'll say if he got half the coverage he gets now, I imagine the election would have been a little different. Again, it wasn't all about Ron Paul. Ron Paul was not the savior. Ron Paul was not our last hope for America. But he's one of the few people who does what he says and says what he does. Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich, Cynthia McKinney, Maxine Waters. But this has been the meme, and this has been growing, and I have been saying that we ain't going to end the fucking war with Obama. You ain't going to get your fucking change. You're going to get chains. However, they may throw us some bones to keep us, again, from wigging out as the wars go on and escalate and as the econo crash continues. I keep saying, well, maybe they'll release some files for us. Maybe they'll throw some, you know, JFK ufology shit out of the archives. Or maybe they'll throw us a bone on the possible legalization, or at least we can hope for some decriminalization of marijuana. So recently on CNN with Campbell Brown, Ron Paul debated the failure of the war on drugs with the Heritage Foundation's Ernest Istook, I-S-T-O-O-K, and again, they were on CNN on March 26th. Ron Paul debates war on drugs supporter, and there's more in there to House.gov and the Heritage Foundation, and more on Arnold Istook. The war on drugs is a bullshit, phony failure. Private, run-for-profit prisons gobble up nonviolent drug offenders, and it's pretty much exactly like in A Scanner Darkly, where at the end, when you find yourself on the plantation, you go, hey, we're making the drugs here that I got arrested for. But two interesting updates. Media getting high on pot legalization. And again, I've said that, I've noted it. We note the memes here on Media Monarchy. This from NBCWashington.com, it may be too soon to call it a movement, but when two of the nation's most revered columnists write columns on the same day advocating for the legalization of marijuana, there's definitely something in the air. So we have, I believe, Joe Klein over on Time Magazine. We've got Leonard Pitts writing for the Miami Herald, again, both highly syndicated. And then there's even another one from the Boston Herald. Media getting high on pot legalization. We'll just see. The other update from the agency French Press, as well as links to the source articles on the scholarly work, marijuana helps in the battle against cancer. The main chemical in marijuana appears to aid in the destruction of brain cancer cells, offering hope for future anti-cancer therapies. This said by researchers in Spain in a study released Thursday. That would be yesterday, April 2nd. The authors from the Complutense University in Madrid, with a link to ucm.es, and it is en español. The authors, working with scientists from other universities, found that the active component of marijuana, tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, causes cancer cells to undergo a process called autophagy. That's, of course, A-U-T-O-P-H-A-G-Y, with a link to Wikipedia to read about autophagy. It's the breakdown that occurs when the cell essentially self-digests. The research, which appears in the April edition of the U.S.-published Journal of Clinical Investigation, demonstrates that THC and related cannabinoids appear to be a new family of potential antimural agent. The authors wrote that the chemical may prove useful in the development of future antitumoral agents. That's what it is. I misspoke. Antitumoral agents. We need a little hyphen in there after anti. The scientists conducted their research on mice, first stimulating the growth of cancer in the lab animals, then injecting them with a daily dose of THC near the site of their tumors. The researchers also analyzed the tumors of two patients in an experimental trial looking at the effects of THC on a highly aggressive form of brain tumor and saw findings, quote, in line with the preclinical evidence first observed in the laboratory mice. Marijuana helps in the battle against cancer. However, I would note, I would be happy if even before we get medical marijuana or decriminalized marijuana or taxed marijuana by Oregon or any other state, can we at least grow some industrial hemp so we can maybe make some paper and some textiles and some fabric and we can make things? People like Ron Paul and Barney Frank, again and again, try and reintroducing the Industrial Hemp Farming Act, I believe it's called. So hopefully, again, we're going to see some movement in that area. Again, we're not going to see an end to the wars from Obama. We're not going to see a return to the Constitution or gold standard or the repeal of the Patriot Act or any of those things you thought you were voting for. We may get some crumbs and some bones thrown our way, hopefully. Which now brings us to the last ugly story we're going to go over on this episode 117 of MediaMonarchy.com. And that is the death of William Bennett. CIA, contract killers, Kosovo, and questions. We now have, again, there's always a sidebar, and maybe something like foodworldorder.com is illustrative of this. Could basically have sub-websites under MediaMonarchy.com just focusing on the particular areas and memes. So Food World Order discusses resource wars and water wars and all of that. I could do a Miltech site, do a police state site, do a site just covering the Congress critters and all that stuff. We could also do a site just covering the mysterious deaths of military folks. or, you know, ex-CIA contractors. We recently, of course, went over Jonathan Bayless, another mysterious Minot Air Force Base death. So, much like that story, as with this story, huge hat tip and thanks for some of the research in the stories, and they're linked to him, and I cite and thank him, Cryptogon.com. I mention that name a lot, and that's CryptoGon.com, Cryptogon.com. Former CIA contractor beaten to death while jogging in the D.C. suburbs with his wife. So, thanks to Cryptogon, we're going to start at the beginning. On March 22nd, the pair were attacked on a morning stroll. That's William Bennett, age 57. He was found dead at 6 a.m. Sunday morning on March 22nd along Riverside Parkway near Rocky Creek Drive by a sheriff's deputy investigating a report of a suspicious vehicle in the area. His wife, Cynthia, 55, was found critically injured about 30 minutes later across the road beyond a bloodied white fence in a muddy ditch. That comes from the Loudoun County Extra from the Washington Post. March 24th, we note that the authorities are eager to interview now-widowed Cynthia Bennett. And then on March 25th, we learned, again, from the Loudoun County Extra, from the Washington Post, William Bennett had been a contractor for the CIA. A Loudoun County man slain while out for an early morning walk with his wife worked as a contractor at the Central Intelligence Agency for several years until 2000, the CIA confirmed, and investigators say they want to meet with agency officials to learn more about the nature of his work. The sheriff said his officers have not determined a motive for Sunday's attack in which William Bennett, 57, was killed and his wife, Cynthia, 57, or rather 55, was critically injured. The assault might have been random, but deputies have not ruled out the possibility that they were targeted. We're just trying to find out if there's anything in his background that could have led to this, Loudoun Sheriff Stephen O. Simpson said. We do that with anybody. It's not just because he's with the government. You talk with family, you talk with friends, you talk with coworkers, you look for enemies. On March 26th, again, NBCWashington.com notes the massive turnout for Lansdowne murder meeting. So, Lansdowne, the town, the little community, and where the murder took place in Loudoun County in Virginia, the residents are freaking out. Is it gang-related? Was this a gang initiation? On March 30th, the FBI is reportedly helping the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office with the ex-CIA slaying. The FBI joined the investigation into the death of a Loudoun County man who used to be a contractor for the CIA. Agents are checking to see if William Bennett has any enemies from his CIA days. Deputies found Bennett's body in a grassy area next to Riverside Parkway early on March 22nd. The couple may have been attacked by three people seen driving suspiciously in the area in a white panel van. The Bennetts were wearing jogging outfits. Investigators still do not know the motive for the attack or whether it was gang-related or random. They also don't know if the attack took place where the couple was found or if the bodies were moved to that location. What they do know is that William Bennett was a CIA contractor until 2000. He was involved in a mistaken bombing of the Chinese embassy in Belgrade in May 1999 during the conflict with Kosovo. Three people were killed, 20 were injured in that bombing. The CIA later took responsibility, and William Bennett was one of the officials who helped identify targets in Belgrade. The death of William Bennett involves the CIA, contract killers, Kosovo, and a lot of questions.
I just thought, you know, it was a little bit more than the normal person who liked to keep to themselves. You know, he just really, really liked to keep to himself.
According to a neighbor, William Bennett, an ex-contract worker for the CIA, led a reclusive lifestyle, staying pretty much inside his home in this Potomac Station neighborhood. He would exercise every day, but only when it was dark outside.
He was always out every day. He went out, but he would only he would always make sure he was home before the sun came up.
Miss Goddard says she never saw Bennett leave his house here in the daytime, except to run out in his shorts to get the mail, and then she said he'd run right back into the garage. Ms. Goddard says the Bennetts would have food delivered once a week, laundry picked up and delivered once a day.
Every day there'd be a bag on the door and a new pickup.
Did you ever see him leave the house in the daylight?
No.
What were you, is that odd?
I just thought he liked to keep to himself. He was very reclusive. We had difficulty getting him to say hello.
William Bennett, his wife Cynthia, found beaten in the dark hours of the morning Sunday along the Lansdowne jogging trail. He was murdered. She was critically wounded.
So where did the attack actually happen? Investigators trying to determine if it happened right here on the trail or someplace else, with the suspects then later putting the Bennett's bodies along the trail.
Police identified Mr. Bennett from fingerprints. They say he has a license to carry a concealed weapon in Virginia. Investigators say they're looking for three suspects who were seen driving around suspiciously in a white panel van. An intelligence source says William Bennett, found beaten to death nearby a jogging trail in Lansdowne, was a figure in the mistaken bombing of a Chinese embassy almost 10 years ago. William Bennett was a former contract worker for the CIA. In May 1999, during the conflict with Kosovo, the Chinese embassy in Belgrade was accidentally bombed. Three people killed, 20 injured. The CIA later took responsibility for the incident, which caused a great deal of tension between China and the U.S. The U.S. apologized and paid the Chinese more than $28 million in compensation. A retired senior intelligence officer tells NBC4 that William Bennett was one of the officials charged with identifying those Belgrade targets, that his job as a CIA contractor ended a short time after that incident. On Sunday, March 22nd, around 5:30 in the morning, the body of Mr. Bennett found near a jogging trail in Lansdowne. He'd been beaten to death. Not far away, police found his wife, Cynthia. She, too, had been beaten, critically injured. She remains in the hospital, unable to talk. The Loudoun County Sheriff's Office is trying to determine if the attack was random or if the Bennetts were targeted. A law enforcement source says so far there is no evidence that links that attack to the Chinese embassy bombing.
Some Loudoun County neighbors are living in fear tonight, 10 days after a couple was brutally attacked while on a morning walk near their Lansdowne home. Greta Cruz is live now with the extreme measure some people are taking now to protect themselves. Greta?
Well, Sine, gun shops around the area are telling me they have seen an increase recently in gun sales. It's not clear whether it's because of what happened here or because Barack Obama is president, but I can tell you a lot of people here are being more vigilant.
The Lombardo's family of Leesburg went shopping today at Loudoun Guns, firm believers in the right to self-defense.
I know that I'm protecting myself and taking the proactive steps to do that.
It's a semi-automatic handgun.
Have you ever had to use it?
No.
But the brutal assault 10 days ago of a Lansdowne couple, William Bennett was killed, his wife Cynthia critically injured. They've been walking along a path right next to Riverside Parkway, has many residents taking new precautions. Some are buying firearms, a pepper spray. Others, like Aaron and Kristen Palin, who live a short distance from the crime scene, have simply changed the way they live.
No longer walking by ourselves when we take her out at night. We're making sure we have cell phones and identification. She's always being walked with dog tags.
Authorities advise people who do arm themselves with guns or pepper spray or tasers to make sure they know how to use them.
If you're not completely familiar with whatever it is you're going to use to defend yourself, it could be taken away and used against you.
Investigators, meantime, still have not been able to talk with Cynthia Bennett, the one person who can help them identify and find the killers.
Now, Sheriff Simpson says they have 13 people working on this case. There have been a lot of leads, also a lot of false rumors, he said. For instance, there was a story recently widely circulated about a van with Florida tags and a guy knocking on doors. Well, it turned out, he says, that was simply a door-to-door salesman. Live in Loudoun County, Virginia, Greta Cruz, ABC 7.
The death of William Bennett. CIA, contract killers, Kosovo, and questions. Now, two of those videos are available in their entirety, swiped by me and posted up to youtube.com/mediamonarchy. The last thing we note, and again, with the hat tip to cryptogon.com, could all of this somehow be related to this story that we posted up a few weeks ago? Belgrade death squad leader was top CIA agent. This from Scotland's Sunday Herald. The late President Milosevic's secret police chief and organizer of Serb death squads during the genocidal ethnic cleansing of disintegrating Yugoslavia was the United States' top CIA agent in Belgrade, according to the independent Belgrade Radio B92. The claim that from 92 until the end of the decade, Jovica Stanisic, head of Serbia's murderous DB secret police, was regularly informing his CIA handlers of the thinking in Milosevic's inner circle, and now this has all shocked the region. Stanisic is said to have loyally served his two masters for 8 years. He is currently awaiting and facing war crimes charges at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. So, could CIA Black Ops be connected to the death of William Bennett, beaten to death in Loudoun County, Virginia on March 22nd. I am sure we have probably not seen the last of this story. That, my friends, is going to do it for this 117th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the 3rd of April, 2009, and of course, we can't get out of here without looking at the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. I keep track of them through StatCounter.com. I've even been looking at some of the traffic on Google Analytics. However, I don't fully understand it yet. However, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration out of Pasadena, that's NASA, friends, reading about the F-18 that crashed in a residential neighborhood in San Francisco many months ago. The Social Security Administration out of Baltimore, Maryland, they Googled Oracle Broadcasting Network being blocked. OracleBroadcasting.com, of course, home of great shows like the Intel Strike Report with Doug from BlacklistedNews.com, as well as Live Free or Die from Lee Rogers and RogueGovernment.com. Of course, the Drug Enforcement Administration out of Arlington. Metronet ADSL out of Croatia, which I guess is probably just their ISP. So somebody in Croatia Googled Media Monarchy. Somebody at Yale out of New Haven, Connecticut was checking out the site, as was HSBC out of London, of course, the banksters. We had the Practical Law Company PowerServe customer allocation in the UK. We also had Merrill Lynch out of Monroe, New York, reading about and behold a big blue horse, that of course being the big sinister-looking horse outside the New World Airport, otherwise known as Denver International Airport. West Virginia Department of Education, they Googled Silver Bridge, West Virginia. Of course, the Silver Bridge disaster. Some theorize that it was presaged and all ties in with the Mothman. Credit Suisse out of the UK Googled London G20. The Navy Network Information Center out of Pensacola, Florida was on MediaMonarchy.com. The National Archives and Records Administration, NARA.gov, out of Temple Hills, Maryland. Someone there Googled Catherine Wilms National Archives. Now, she was referenced on our story about the National Archives releasing conspiracy-related things tied in with the release of National Treasure 2 a couple months ago. This basically looks like Catherine Wilms at the National Archives Googling herself, because that's where the ISP hit comes from, and it circles right around to a story about them. So that's funny if that's really true. The U.S. Office of Personnel Management out of Washington, D.C., they Googled National Level Exercise 2009. Of course, the FEMA exercise coming up this summer. CRC.Army.mil, headquarters USAISC out of Arizona, again and again. The EPA out of D.C. were reading about the test drill at Miami International Airport aiming to slow pandemics. Somebody at Reed College here in Portland, Oregon, Googled Black Helicopter Portland. NBC Universal out of Munster, Indiana, reading about the DHS publishing a 315-page book honoring Michael Chertoff's select speeches. The Battelle Memorial Institute out of Columbus, Ohio. They're reading the funny story from a few weeks ago about the sign hackers broadcasting zombie warnings. That was in Texas, where people hacked into the road warning signs and it said, "Danger! zombies ahead. The interesting thing to note, however, here, Battelle Memorial Institute, B-A-T-T-E-L-L-E, CIA contractor, military front, they do germ warfare work, and of course are tied in with anthrax and Fort Detrick and all that. Again, the Navy Network Information Center out of Pensacola, Florida, they were digging way into the archives and reading about the Air Force stripping the Playboy poser of her status. We had the U.S. Senate Sergeant-at-Arms out of Washington, D.C., reading about FEMA suspending their top-off terror drills and SAIC dropping out of the competition due to conflict of interest. Again, you'll remember top-off 4 took place here in Portland, Oregon. The West Virginia Department of Education out of Charleston, West Virginia, they were reading History Mystery, Opium, Milk, JFK, Churchill, and Nazis. However, the last one, the Department of Homeland Security out of Springfield, Virginia, Googled, "Is it gang-related?" William Bennett Lansdowne murder. And that's where we're going to leave it. I thank you, my friends. I won't belabor the point on all this means to me and hopefully to you, and we will keep doing it. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, like my man Webster Griffin Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.